23 minutes past the hour, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a do you have a PhD on your business card, Don? I just got to ask you.
Probably.
Yes. Okay. And would that be on your Valle della Pace business card, your winery business card, or your biochemist business card? Yeah. Did biochemists have business cards? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you probably worked in a science lab, you would.
Okay.
But yes, I have it. I have it on my Valle della Pace business card.
Okay. All right. So if you present that to someone, I imagine right away they start asking you questions, picking your brain for things, and trying to, and probably elevate the conversation a little. Do they use bigger words when they talk to you as a PhD?
Usually not.
No?
No.
Okay. Just the vernacular. Dr. Don Clark is a biochemist, and he is in Garden Valley, Texas, and also happens to be a board member at Creation Moments. And Don joins us every Tuesday morning, and we talk about things scientific and things faith. We talk about evolution and creation and the biblical story of creation, the biblical account of creation, maybe a better word. And today the topic is spiders. Hawaiians, I've never heard of this critter. I'm looking at a picture. And Don, I've got to tell you, my week has been full of critters. I spent, I know you weren't listening yesterday, but in church Sunday, we had you would appreciate this because you're originally from Louisiana, a Cajun food fest after the service on Sunday.
And, very nice.
And they stirred up see if you're familiar with these dishes. Well, you know about red beans and rice, don't you?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
yes.
They fixed that.
Very much so.
They fixed shrimp etouffee.
Very nice.
Yeah?
That's good.
And then outside, they had this big boiling cauldron full of corn cobs and onions and lemons. And then they picked up this big cooler, and they dumped these little red spindly-looking things in them, in the boiling water. And they stirred it up.
Did they have crawfish?
Yes, they did.
Oh yeah!
That's what they
could, boy!
Yeah, and then they unrolled a roll of brown paper on a counter inside, and they dumped out these little red and brown things, these crawdads or crawfish or crayfish, whatever they're called, and we were supposed to eat them.
Mm-hmm. You know? And did you?
Well, I watched a demonstration of how it's supposed to be done, and then I left. Yeah, so my memories will be of the shrimp etouffee, which was excellent. And actually, I remember those crawdads too. That's pretty special stuff. But just after dumping, there were hundreds of them. This must have been a very expensive. This is a little church. This is a little house church. I'm just impressed. And the cooks know what they're doing, and they actually demonstrated how you eat a crawfish. And the first thing he did was to pull off his little head. And never mind. Let's just talk about spiders.
Yep. And some folks actually you pull off the body, the midsection there, you actually suck the juice from it.
Yep.
Which can be good. And then the trick, of course, is to peel the tail. So there's not a lot of meat on a crawfish.
Yeah, I know.
Because they're fairly small, and their shells tend to be a lot tougher than a shrimp, for example. A shrimp is easier to peel than a crawfish.
Okay.
So it takes you a lot of time to get enough quantity to fill your stomach. But they're fun.
That's time to chat, though. It's a very neighborly kind of thing to do. You sit around a big table and you peel crawfish and you eat them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds like
and
a nice
thing. If they put potatoes in there, for example, like red potatoes. And
yep, they did.
In the corn, then, of course, the potatoes in the corn is spicy, like the Zatarain crawfish boil that they typically use.
Yeah.
And then you eat that, and it's quite nice.
Okay. Well, I missed an opportunity by walking out then, I guess. It was time. I was full. Because they topped it all off with blackberry cobbler, and I'd already had that.
So you eat this crawfish stuff quite a bit, do you, Don?
Oh, we used to in Louisiana. They're not quite as readily available up here in East Texas. We used to have crawfish boils quite a bit, and you let the crawfish run a plank before you boil them, so you know that they're fresh and alive.
Oh, okay.
That crawfish in there. So they kind of run a plank, and you you put them in brine first to purge them.
Oh,
purge
their, okay.
And then you let them walk the plank. And the ones that make it to the end of the plank get to be thrown into the boiling cauldron.
Walking the plank, eh?
And, then they... and some of them don't make it?
Some of them don't make it.
Oh, really?
They do little swan dives into the boiling water. Okay. Make a splash on their way out. So okay, well, all right. So much for crawdads, but we're talking now about stick spiders. I didn't realize that spiders change colors too, like frogs and amphibians and some other things, but that's kind of what this is about. And apparently this is a story of more dissembling on the part of evolutionists, huh? Is that right?
Well, yes, actually, because their behavior, these stick spiders' behavior, you know, they actually can migrate from island to island in the Hawaiian Islands. And depending on where they wind up, whether they're, you know, under rocks or under leaves or under lichen or something, they will be different colors. And so... this particular study by Rosemary Gillespie that was described in the Science Daily, summarized probably in the Science Daily, it was, and she's from the University of Berkeley. She's an evolutionary biologist, so by that name alone, she's obviously biased. But they discovered that, gee, if one of these migrates from Kauai to Oahu, for example, or to Molokai, it might be a brown spider initially, and then it turns glossy gold if it lives under a leaf, or it turns to a matted white spider if it lands on some lichen. So they said, oh, wow, this is, and it's predictable. It's predictable. You take that brown spider and you put him, and he, you know, winds up on a different island, and he's going to be the color that he winds up with, depending on where the habitat is. And so this kind of, and it happens very, very quickly. It's not something that, you know, takes generation upon generations to occur. It happens very, very quickly. So, it's as if this this property or this behavior of this particular spider is actually programmed in somehow. It's pre-programmed, and she actually says that it's like, wow, this is predictable, and these changes are rapid, and so therefore it looks like there's something pre-programmed in the spider, and. What's driving this, according to evolution, is the pressure, kind of the environmental pressure is driving it, and that in a sense is correct. However, the explanation that this is an evolutionary process is totally incorrect, because this is something that has to be at the DNA level. So if you look at the DNA for these spiders, regardless of the color, and this is the thing that evolution, it just drives me nuts, that evolutionists do, biologists do, is that they call these three different species. Same spider.
No, they do.
Three different species.
Oh.
But these three different species can change into the other species. Mm. Oh, so since they're changing species, they must be evolving.
Well, they're magic species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're magic species. So my question to the evolutionists is, why don't we call different people with different color different species?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the same rationale. I mean, now, we can't necessarily change color so quickly. God didn't create us and design us that way. But these spiders can. So in essence, they're the same spider, but just happen to be different colors on different, you know, when they migrate to a different island and they adapt to their environment. So how do we explain this as a creationist, for example? what is it about these spiders that they have that we can explain from a creation point of view? Well, obviously, even as Rosemary Gillespie states that this is pre-programmed, and we agree with that, there's a pre-programmed switch. And so it's got to be at the DNA level. And there's already an explanation with new genetics that is out there, and it's called epigenetics. And epigenetics is not necessarily new coding information or new genes. What it is it's a modification of the proteins that protect, for example, the DNA. And it has the ability to turn on and off genes. So a chemical modification to an outside coding protein, for example, can cause different expressions. And we have this. Humans have epigenetics going on. In that, and we've talked about this in previous programs, in that, for example, if you latch on to fear, for example, then your prodigy are more prone to, not all of them, but some of them might be more prone to fear. So something in your environment, you know, stimulates fear within you, you latch on to it. And then that kind of coats the DNA with certain compounds or certain tags, certain parts of your DNA to say, "Oh, I got to express more of this particular protein." For example, that might stimulate or a compound that might stimulate fear.
Let me see if I can state this another way, because this is slowly dawning on me now here. The evolutionists will tend to look at these changes and say they are caused externally, but a creationist will say, no, it is a reaction of the species using abilities, coding, DNA that's already within it, that's there for the purpose of helping them to adapt to just such change.
Yes, and it is the outside, for example. There must be some type of sensor.
But that's the catalyst. That's the catalyst, not the agent that changes.
Yeah. So it's already pre-programmed in. It's probably a defense mechanism, obviously, for changing colors so that you're not quite as obvious to the outside world, let's say. But there is some type of sensor that is on this particular spider that says, oh, you know, whatever that stimulus is. And unfortunately, they didn't go the extra mile and say, well, let's figure out how this occurs. They didn't do that. They just stopped and say, well, this is probably a diurnal predation that is most likely, selective pressure responsible for the close color matching, if you will. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, okay, there's some type of, it's from the predators that eat the spider, and that pressure then is selectively selecting these particular spiders. They didn't actually study the spiders from a DNA point of view to see what was actually going on or to try to figure out what the actual mechanism was. But all these spiders have the same DNA, and so there must be, for example, whether it be the eyes of the spider or something, the spider knows that, okay, I'm on a different environment, therefore I need to express, and it doesn't think this, of course, but it's built in. Therefore, I need to express this particular gene or this particular coloration of my, exoskeleton, if you will. And so it does. But that's innate, that's built in, and it has nothing to do with evolution. It has everything to do with the way the spider was designed initially. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. It's not not to, yes, the external pressure, but it's not external pressure so much as it is, it's like you have a photocell that can detect different colors, and which is an eye. Mm-hmm. And that information, for example, is being translated internally, which is already built into the spider, to say, well, I need to have a gold exterior, or I need to have a white exterior, or I need to be brown, because I'm living under bark and I'm living under the rocks and stuff like that. So it will then match and mimic the environment.
But look, again, this is a case of creationists and evolutionists agreeing on the data, but disagreeing on the cause of the change. Living in a computer age like we do, it seems to me that all of us should be able to look at computers, and we might be amazed at what computers can do and how fast they can manipulate data and produce sound and produce pictures and form conclusions and listen to us. But none of that would be possible unless somewhere there was a programmer who could write the code to give computers that ability.
Well, absolutely. And the computers obviously only do what the code says. So if you have a stimulus, if you built a machine, for example, that has sensors, and one of the sensors says, you know, raise this arm on this robot or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. When this occurs, then it's a simple, you know, signal. It senses, it sees, if you will, and sure enough, it raises its arm or grab this particular object if it's shaped like this. And all of that, yeah, obviously, I mean, the more sophisticated artificial intelligence we get and we develop, the closer we get to modeling, if you will, some of the aspects of the human mind, but it's only a very small fraction of the aspects of the human mm-hmm. mind. But that should lead us to, when we see something like this, to say, hey, this is obviously coding. Mm-hmm. This is obviously sophisticated coding that is built into the, in this case, the spider, this stick spider. And it's not evolution. Mm-hmm. The DNA is not changing. The DNA is not recoding itself. The DNA is just expressing different molecules, if you will, based on external stimulus. Something very, very similar to what we do now pretty much every day in a manufacturing facility that uses robots. Mm-hmm. And develop sophisticated computers that have these different types of abilities, we should be looking at something like what is already in nature and saying, you know what, that is pointing to a creator, and it is not, this just didn't happen by chance, but is totally designed, and it's a marvelous design because it's a design to help, protect the spider based on what environment it's in.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody can test this theory of ours here by looking at your computer and inviting it to come with you into the next room without touching it. Mm-hmm. That's an external stimulus. It won't do it unless it has an app and is constructed with some way to move on its own. I mean, it has to have been programmed ahead of time to be ready for that particular command, which means somebody anticipated that command.
Exactly, and we already have devices that do this. Mm-hmm. There are drones, these drones that you can buy in Best Buy and stuff like that. There are drones that have the sophistication. You tell it to, you show yourself to it, and you put it up there, and you're flying it, and you give it the command to follow you, and it follows you. Mm-hmm. It follows you. It doesn't follow somebody else. It follows you.
But so only
exactly
because
what
it's
you're
programmed.
Describing already exists.
Yeah. But it has to be programmed. I mean, somebody mm-hmm. built it for that mm-hmm. purpose. And that's the idea here, is that the spider adaptation, and this is the headline from the story, stick spider adaptation is purposeful and predictable. And that's the way we build computers, too. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you, because on creationmoments.com, the website, you will find a wealth of information that explains to you and gives you the scientific support and evidence for the biblical creation story. It's a pretty neat website. In fact, there's a brand new website in the making, and we'll make it even easier to find this stuff. But you can go there right now from brokenroadradio.com. There's a link to Creation Moments on the right-hand side of our homepage there. Click on it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And Don Clark, as always, we're grateful that you stopped in on this Tuesday morning and enlightened us. Continue to do so, will you?
Oh, we will, yes.
All right.
So it's fun. Fun to do these.
We'll see you next Tuesday. Go ahead, David.
Happy crawdad eating.
No.
Yeah, we got to find some around here.
Yeah. Well, you look in ditches, I'm told, drainage ditches and stuff. That's where they live, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So, and how do you collect them? You scoop them up?
There's square nets that actually, when we were kids, we used to go crawdad fishing. Crawfish fishing. And so you would go in the ditches, and you would go in the ponds, and put your nets down, and go back, collect.
You use bait.
You use smelt.
Okay.
Just pieces of beef, basically.
Okay. The secret is out. We'll have the whole country eating crawdads or crayfish or whatever they're called. Well, good luck to you. Don't let them bite, though. Don't let them bite. Don, we'll see you next Tuesday. Take care.
All right. Very good.
See you, Don.